This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 234, and I'm going to talk about dry fire practice. I got a voicemail from a listener recently with a question about dry firing, and I thought I would talk about dry fire practicing and some suggestions for you. You know, when I teach a class, I always like to encourage people to dry fire the techniques that they learn, because a lot of what we teach can be dry fire. Nothing beats live fire, but a lot of what we teach, like, you know, drawing and presenting the gun to the target and getting a sight picture, and even some of the gun manipulations, like performing reloads and clearing malfunctions and all that, can all be done dry fire practice, and that's very important stuff to learn. So I'm going to talk a little bit about it. A question came to me recently as to whether it's safe to dry fire, and I'll get into all that and cover that shortly. Now, before I get started in that, let all of you know that my email address is bob@handgunworld.com. And if you want to send me a voicemail like you're going to hear on this podcast, you can leave me a voicemail at 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727, or you can go straight to my website at handgunworld.com. And if you look in the right-hand margin, all the way down kind of near the bottom, somewhere down close to the bottom, you will see a Call Me button. And you can just hit that Call Me button, and it will connect your phone with my voicemail. Okay? That should work out pretty well for you. Okay, let's talk about dry fire. Let's go ahead and listen to this voicemail that came from a listener.
Hey, Bob. This is Chuck in Greensboro, North Carolina. I actually drive a truck for the post office, and I just got finished listening to your latest podcast. The one about traveling. I really enjoy your show, but I just had a really, really quick question, and I've heard so many arguments about this, and I honestly don't know. What my question is will dry firing a handgun mess up the firing pin? I've heard so many people talk about dry firing practice, and I dry fire my guns all the time, and it's never messed mine up, but I still constantly hear people say that if you dry fire your gun, you'll mess up your firing pin. Anyway, that's my question, and I'll be anxious to hear your answer. Thanks. Have a good day. Bye.
All right. Thanks for the call. Most modern firearms are okay to dry fire, but not rimfire pistols. There are some exceptions. Rimfire rifles and pistols should not be dry fired. Mainly it's because of the design of the rimfire chamber. A rimfire firearm, when you dry fire it, the striker hits the outside mouth of the chamber instead of the soft brass rim of the cartridge. So by dry firing, you can not only damage or destroy your firing pin, but over time, it's going to peen the barrel face. And extensive peening can be so bad that the ammunition sometimes might not even make its way into the chamber. So if you're talking about a rim fire, like a .22 rifle or a .22 handgun, do not dry fire that. And some of the older pistol designs have real brittle firing pins. CZ-52, for example. Pulling the trigger on an empty chamber with that kind of a pistol, and you're going to break your firing pin pretty easily. Even sometimes after just 10 or 12 strikes, you could break the firing pin. Now, for some of you who do own the CZ-52, there are different firing pins that you can purchase and install in there that will take care of that problem. But, you know, it's some of the really older designs, yeah, it might be true that you could damage your firing pin. Now, one problem with a lot of the center fire pistol designs is that the firing pin travels too far when it's dropped on an empty chamber. See, it's used to hitting around, and when you dry fire it, it pushes that firing pin a little bit farther. And in many semi-auto firearms, semi-auto guns, the firing pin is only stopped when it hits the end of the firing pin channel. So that's something to think about. Now, I recommend snap caps. Snap caps are a great way to dry fire because they simulate an actual round in the chamber. My Glocks, I've dry fired like crazy, and they're fine. I've heard of people dry firing M&Ps and XDs and even some 1911s. Modern guns, it's usually not going to hurt, but why do that? Why not use snap caps? And the reason I bring that up is because with a snap cap, you can practice other things easily, like, for example, performing reloads. And you can actually, you know, simulate real ammo in the gun. You know, so in other words, when you insert a fresh magazine and you send that slide home, it's going to go home and it's going to feel just like you are manipulating the gun with real ammunition. And snap caps don't cost much. I mean, they're very cheap. Get yourself a supply of 25 to 50 snap caps. You do lose them. It's just real easy to lose snap caps. So we use them at the range. Ben and I use them at the range, and I've used them also at times when teaching close range gunfighting, just to get people used to doing some of the reload drills and the malfunction clearing, you know, using snap caps. It's easy to be able to teach that at the range. So, you know, we'll usually do it dry fire several times and then maybe once or twice with snap caps and then put live ammo in at our classes and people can train that way. Now, there's other older handguns like old Smith & Wesson revolvers. Some of those have some of them have a free floating striker pinned to the hammer. And again, you know, there's the same problem that when the firing pin over travels, it can hit the frame and possibly cause damage to the striker. Now, again, I was talking about modern pistols. You know, it's so easy to just get snap caps. Modern firearms are designed to have the firing pin hit a primer and ignite the powder and make the gun go bang, make the ammo go bang, and propel a small projectile out of the barrel at high velocity. That's what they are actually designed for. They're really not, by design, intended to be dry fired 1,000 times. Doesn't mean you can't get away with it, but that's not really what they're intended to do. Okay, dry firing a modern center-fired pistol, it does not really result in the firing pin hitting air, for example. Something has to stop it if the primer or the snap cap is not there. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't withstand that because, like I said, now, Glocks are so bulletproof and so durable, and so are M&P pistols and XD and some of the Taurus guns that, you know, the question is whether you're going to, damage your firing pin. Some people say you will. Some people say whatever stops that firing pin, whether it's the impact, or the impact of that, whether it's the pin or the rivet or just the firing pin channel or whatever, some people say it's eventually going to go ahead and damage your firing pin. But a lot of the pistols are built with such good tolerances, and modern metallurgy has enabled engineers to produce very strong steel, and it kind of almost eliminates the problems that can be caused from dry fire pistols. But seriously, really, they're not really designed to do it. So get some snap caps. Again, I've dry fired my guns without snap caps. Now, pretty much whenever I dry fire practice, that's what I'm putting in. Please make sure no real ammo is anywhere, even in the room, not even near you, when you're dry fire practicing, okay? Double check. Make sure the gun is unloaded. Put live ammo in a different room and just bring a couple of snap caps to the area where you're going to be practicing. Now, I'll give you one example. According to Ruger, Ruger says that dry firing their pistols is perfectly fine on all of their modern center fire guns. And it's perfectly fine for clearing the weapon, dropping the hammer or the striker, or just trying out the trigger. That's fine. But they do say, they recommend for practice that you use snap caps, and it just makes sense. So now, you have to remember, I'm not a gunsmith, and I don't get real technical and things like that. So, you know, if there's a few things in here that are not 100% right on, please feel free to call into my voicemail and give me some information on it, and I'll put you on the next show. Now, let's talk a little bit about what kind of dry fire practice that I suggest. First of all, trigger control. It's very important to get a good, clean trigger press and shoot to reset. I'm a big fan of shooting to reset. In other words, what that means is once you press the trigger, okay, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to manually retract that slide just a little bit, not all the way. This is if you don't have a dry fire practice kit. You're going to have to manually retract that slide just a little bit in order to basically recock the pistol. And you'll notice because your trigger will move forward and the pistol will be recocked. Then what I would do is only let the trigger out just to the reset point. You'll hear it. That's one thing I love about Glocks is they have a great reset. Although, I'll tell you what, I got to compliment the Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. When Ben and I talked Beyond Concealed Carry 2 last weekend, I trained the second day with my Shield. What a wonderful little pistol. Man, this thing is great. And Smith & Wesson really has the trigger nice on that gun. They've made a nice trigger with a nice reset, a nice positive reset. And that's what I like. I like to be able to feel that. I've trained my muscle memory. I've trained my finger, basically, to find that reset point. It does two things. First of all, it shortens the trigger pull. You can be more accurate with a shortened trigger pull. Pretty much simple as that. The less trigger travel, the less room for error, in my opinion. It also allows me to shoot faster. This is the technique that competition shooters really learn, is shooting to reset. With 1911s, boy, isn't it nice? Isn't that a beautiful reset? Nice and short. Most of them are crisp, and the trigger barely travels at all. So, got to compliment 1911s on really good triggers. I happen to like striker fire pistols, so I shoot to reset. I happen to like the reset on Glocks. So, what I do is when I'm dry firing, I'll press the trigger and I'll concentrate on good trigger control. One of the things you might want to do is to balance an empty case, an empty shell casing from a round that you've fired. Put it straight up. So balance it on the back of the round so that it's sticking straight up. And balance that on the pistol right in front of your front sight. Press the trigger and don't let that empty case fall. That's one way. Some people use a coin. I don't use a coin. I like to make it harder than that, especially with a Glock. A Glock's got a flat slide. With a flat slide of a Glock, it's pretty easy to put a coin on there and press the trigger and not let the coin fall off. But try balancing a round on the slide. I was demonstrating this to a class recently that I was teaching. I balance the empty shell casing on my front sight. Try that. Try balancing it on your front sight, pressing the trigger, and not letting that shell case fall. I can do it. I can do it. Not every single time, but I can probably do it about six out of eight times. And if you can get that kind of trigger control, you're going to be pretty accurate. Okay, but have a snap cap in the gun when you're doing that. So that's one way to dry fire practice that I strongly recommend. And practicing that trigger control and only letting the trigger out to the reset point and then press it again, shortening that. The other kind of dry fire practice that I recommend highly, and this is great with snap caps, is practicing your reloads. So basically what you want to do is what you're going to do is you're going to retract your slide. This is with a semi-auto pistol, by the way. You're going to retract your slide and lock it open, all right, to simulate that you've run out of ammo. So now you're at slide lock. You've run out of ammo. You're at slide lock. Make sure you got all your concealed carry gear on. Have your favorite holster. For me, it's a Black Mamba or it's a White Dog holster. And you know, or a Dale Fricke Archangel if I'm practicing from the appendix carry position. And I usually, what I do is I love to carry my spare magazines in DeSantis Magpackers in my pocket. You can get the DeSantis Magpackers off my website, by the way, from my Amazon store. Just go to handgunworld.com, go to my everyday carry store, my EDC store. You'll see the DeSantis Magpackers on there. And you can buy them from Amazon and to help me get a little credit and support my show. So here's the way I dry fire practice. I've got a magazine with a snap cap in it. It's in my DeSantis Magpacker, and it's in my pocket. And what I do is I make sure that my muzzle is always pointed in a safe direction. I lock the slide back to simulate that my pistol has run out of ammo. So at this point, I'm practicing my slide lock reloads. And then what I do is I very quickly take out the magazine, stick it in the gun, rack, and I chamber a new round using the overhand tug slingshot method because I don't like to use the slide release for various reasons that I've talked about on this show. And it works great, and I do that with snap caps. Now, you can also use snap caps to create malfunctions, and you can do a pretty good job of that, too. You know, you can create a stovepipe, for example, using a snap cap. Create a stovepipe malfunction in your gun, and have another magazine with snap caps in it ready to go. Do the tap, rack, and bang, and do that drill and practice that way too. So that's something that I very strongly recommend. And by the way, if you are a member of our Shooters Club, we do demonstrate this live fire. Ben and I do this on video. You're going to hear from a member of our Shooters Club pretty soon. He called in a voicemail. We demonstrate it on video. If you come to our classes, you'll also learn it. And pretty much any trainer worth their salt is teaching you how to clear malfunctions during the class. And most of them will teach it like we do. We'll teach it dry first. We'll teach it with snap caps, and they will teach it live using live ammo. And there's a couple different ways, that couple different malfunctions you can work on. You can work on clearing stovepipes. You can work on clearing double feeds. Double feeds are a little bit different. You got to rip the slide out, lock the slide to the back, rip the magazine out, insert the fresh one, and then you got to work it, which is basically racking a new one in there and get back in the fight and keep firing. Okay, some malfunctions cannot be cleared with a simple tap, rack, and bang. So you need to check that out, and we teach all that kind of stuff. Good stuff to practice that you can also do it with either empty shell casings or you can do it with snap caps. Now, another technique that I strongly recommend that you practice dry fire is one-handed reloads, one-handed manipulations. Can you reload your gun one-handed? This is something that Ben and I were teaching last week. You know, can you do one-handed gun manipulations? What if your weak hand is taken out of the fight? I guess, actually, I shouldn't call it a weak hand. I'm sorry. Bad terminology, isn't it? What if your other shooting hand is taken out of the fight? For example, I'm a right-hander. What if my left-hander is taken out of the fight? Can you reload your gun one-handed? Can you clear a malfunction one-handed? Do you know how to do that? Okay, we teach that. You know, can you do that? There's a way to do it. Matter of fact, we're going to be putting this on video pretty soon on the Shooters Club. And if you come to one of our classes, if you come to one of our level 2 classes, you'll learn that as well. It's a very important skill for you to know. It's great. You can dry fire it. You can dry fire practice it hundreds and hundreds of times so that you got the muscle memory down. You got to be very, very careful not to sweep yourself with the muzzle when you're doing one-handed manipulations, because it's very easy to sweep yourself. So you got to really be careful. And this is why I highly recommend a lot of dry fire practice when you do this. And watch yourself. And put yourself on video doing it. Have somebody else watch you do it dry fire to make sure that you're not sweeping the inside of your thigh or your leg or your abdomen or all kinds of different body parts that you could be sweeping when you're doing one-handed gun manipulations. But you got to do it, folks. You got to practice that. You know, to be a gunfighter, and I say gunfighter because, look, if you're in a fight, if that unfortunate day happens where that day you got to use your gun to protect yourself, it could end up being a fight. Remember, it's a fight, okay? It's not a shooting exhibition. It's a fight. Fights never go as planned, ever. They don't go as planned. Ask people who have been in gunfights. Ben Branham's been in 11 of them. You know, he'll tell you. Many other people will tell you who have been either in combat or law enforcement who have been in shootings. They never go as planned. So because they don't go as planned, you got to have a plan for when something happens. It's got to be reactive. It's got to be instinctive. Can you manipulate your gun one-handed? You know, some of you might not believe this, but yes, you can clear a malfunction one-handed. You can reload your gun one-handed. Pretty important stuff to know. Now, another dry fire practice exercise. You really don't need, you don't even need to dry fire your gun really to do this. You really don't even need snap caps, but practicing the draw. Practicing the draw and making sure you're keeping your booger hook off the bang switch. I'm so glad that Eric Shelton started coming up with that. I don't know if he started it, but I remember when I was listening to the handgun podcast when Eric was doing it. The booger hook off the bang switch. So I'm borrowing that phrase from him. But practice your draw over and over and over again. Dry fire. It's important that you do this with your regular concealed carry gear and your regular concealed carry gun, no matter what you're carrying, even if you're carrying a pocket 380. Okay, do you stand in front of the mirror and dry fire practice and practice drawing that gun hundreds and thousands of times out of your pocket? Because when the stink hits the fan and you really need your gun and it's crunch time and it's fight time and it's time to save your life, split seconds count. How quickly can you do it? That's what's important. One reason I don't like pocket carry, and I try to stay away from it as much as I can. Sometimes I'm forced to. Sometimes I have no other choice but to pocket carry. But I try to stay away from it because it's slow. It's very slow as opposed to drawing from your belt behind your hip or even in the appendix carry position. Hey, and by the way, speaking of appendix carry, one of the things that I worked on when I was when Ben and I were instructing our level 2 class last weekend, I trained with my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield for the second day. I happen to think that the M&P Shield is a terrific gun if you're going to appendix carry. And here's why. This is the only reason I can think of to have a safety mounted on a striker-fired gun that's really essentially a double-action gun. And that is appendix carry. What I practiced doing with the Shield, a lot of people think that when you reholster an appendix carry that it can be kind of dangerous. Well, what's nice is with the Shield, it's got the safety on it. So I engage the safety. In other words, I put it on safe, reholster, and then while it's in my holster, I was using my Remora holster for appendix carry for day 2 of the class. While it's in my holster, I can stick my thumb in there and disengage the safety. So therefore, if I have to draw my gun, it's not on safe, and I don't have to worry about the safety. I don't have to worry about disengaging the safety and possibly missing it. But you don't have to do that. You can leave it on safe if you want. So that's what's nice about 1911s or any other gun that has a safety, is when you're holstering, you can engage that safety to make it a little safer for some people who think that, you know, if they're a little bit nervous when they're holstering their loaded gun, especially in the appendix carry. I would have to say, and I would have to admit, that that's a case, that's a good case for a gun that has a safety on it. Practice that dry fire over and over and over again. So what I was doing is I was engaging the safety when I was holstering and then disengaging it while it was in the holster so that when I went to draw it and fire it, I did not have to worry about disengaging a safety. I have trained so much, so many thousands of rounds and so many hundreds of hours of training with my Glocks that I'm just not used to disengaging a safety before I shoot. Now, for some of you who train hard and often with 1911s, or you compete a lot with 1911s, for you it might be just a natural instinctive motion to disengage that safety. Either way, I just wanted to tell you that that's what I was doing with my Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. Nice little gun. Now, you'll need a target when you dry fire practice, and especially when you're drawing. Now, some people wonder, well, what kind of target should I use for the dry fire practice? Well, I would say try to find something that simulates a bad guy And what I've done, and I've done this in my garage before, is I've taken one of my old shirts that I really didn't wear too much anymore, and I've pinned it up on the wall in the garage, and I practice dry firing my shirt. That way, I'm looking at a shirt. I'm looking at something that looks like a torso, and I put different colors up there too. Because think about this, all right? You can't predict what's going to happen. So many of us train and we shoot at targets, right? We shoot at cardboard targets, brown colored targets, or white colored targets, or green colored targets, or what, you know, the typical IDPA targets or the B-27 targets that people use for teaching concealed carry classes sometimes, you know, or competition targets, or whatever the range happens to have, or bullseye targets. Well, is that realistic? You know, is the bad guy going to be wearing a bullseye target on him? Is the bad guy going to be wearing a cardboard-shaped target? No. So why not practice shooting at something that closely resembles a bad guy? Shoot at shirts. Shoot at pictures of bad guys. Okay, shoot at different colors. It's very important that you get used to putting your sights on different colors and looking at different colors as your target, because you never know what the bad guy or the bad person is going to be wearing, do you? And sometimes your sights look a little bit different when they're up against a red background or a black background or a green, or even, what about a shirt with a pattern? Okay, what if it's a shirt with a pattern, and that kind of background is going to look a little bit different, isn't it? So your front sight's going to kind of change a little bit, isn't it? Think about that. You got to have something to shoot at that I think is somewhat realistic. Now, the other thing I want to mention about dry fire practice, and Tom Givens wrote about this, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this article as well. But one of the things that he says that I really like is he says, sloppy practice is worse than no practice at all. Your goal is to rack up a huge number of correct repetitions over time to build reflexive skills and build what is called muscle memory. We call it that even though muscles don't really have memory. And kinesthetic programming and conditioned reflexive responses, a habit that you do over and over and over again. Repetition is the mother of learning. Another important thing that Tom mentions in this article, great article, I'll link to it, by the way. It was on usconcealedcarry.com. If you get interrupted during a dry fire session by a phone call or a distraction, start all over. Go back to step one. Okay, if you get interrupted, it's going to happen. Go back and start over. A failure to do that is an invitation to disaster. Okay? Plus, it's going to build bad habits and bad memory, bad muscle memory. Now, dry fire practice should only be conducted in one designated, established area and nowhere else in your home. Pick one area, stick with that. Okay? Don't go to different areas. You're you know, here's the thing. Accidents can happen even during dry fire. But more importantly, find an area where you can focus, where you're less likely to get distracted. That's one reason why you keep it confined to one established area in your home, because you can get mentally focused, and you know that's when you can concentrate on learning the feel of your trigger, learning the presentation of your gun from the holster, and so forth. It eliminates distractions. Okay, the area should have a safe wall, a wall that will actually stop bullets just in case you happen to make a mistake, in case you have a brain fart. Okay, a brick exterior wall or a stone fireplace could work, or you could use a body armor vest as a backstop. If you happen to have a body armor vest, you can put that up and practice shooting at that. Now, you might say, well, Bob, why do you want to do this? All right, I'm using snap caps, or I'm not using any ammo in the gun. Don't take the chance. Ammunition's goal is to find its way into the chamber of your gun and ignite and push that projectile out of the muzzle of your firearm. That's the goal of every round, and that's the way it was all designed, and that's the way these things were designed. So utmost safety is important when dry fire practice. When you enter your dry fire designated area. Clear the gun, remove all live ammunition from the area. It even includes loaded magazines or speed loaders or rounds in your pocket. Get rid of it all. Take it to another room, as I said earlier. Now, here's some other points to remember. Once you get ready to dry fire practice, take a deep breath and relax. Okay? Couple of deep breaths, if that's what you have to do to relax. And say out loud, I'm beginning my dry fire practice time. Say that to yourself out loud. Robbie Robinson wrote a great article on this, and I'm borrowing some information from him. I'm beginning my dry fire practice. Say that out loud to yourself. Okay? For the first 2 weeks, practice every day about 15 to 20 minutes maximum. You don't want to overdo your dry fire practice, especially at first. And when I started dry firing, this was the method I used. This is what I looked up, and I kind of went by this. I found a couple of other really good articles on it, but this was a good one. And there were a few others, and I kind of put it together, and I came up with a regimen for myself. Just 15 to 20 minutes a day. Whenever you start anything, even when you start workouts, they say just start slow, 15 or 20 minutes. For the first couple weeks, and pick one skill. I like to pick just one skill. So you go into the room, and you say, okay, I'm beginning my dry fire practice right now. And I'm going to work on one skill. Maybe it's trigger press. Maybe it's, shooting to reset. Maybe it's reloading. Whatever it is. And just do that one skill for the first couple weeks, 15 to 20 minutes. The second couple weeks, practice 2 to 3 times a week, not every day. And maybe extend it a little longer. Extend it to 25 or 30 minutes and maybe combine a couple of skills. After that, practice 1 or 2 times a week. Maybe extend it to 45 minutes to an hour. And then combine 3 or 4 skills, for example. You might want to vary your practice routines. You might want to start with slow gun presentations and then gradually speed it up till you're drawing really fast and watching your trigger finger and noticing what you're doing with your trigger finger when you're doing that. If you have a double action, single action gun, practice using the double action trigger a lot. Like if you got a SIG or if you have a Beretta, that's double action, single action. Practice using that double action a lot. In classes, I see people throwing off that first double action shot quite a bit, all right, because they're starting with their gun in the double action mode. Okay, then move on to other skills. So practice that. And always practice very slow and perfect at first. Do it real slow. Slow it down to like half speed or even quarter speed so that you get the technique down. Okay, and then once you're finished, say out loud to yourself, I'm finished with my dry fire practice for the day. Put the gun away. Don't practice anymore. Not even any more at all. And then go on with your life until the next practice session. Now, I want to say something about lasers. For those of you that have Crimson Trace lasers or Laser Max lasers, these are terrific dry fire tools. I don't have one, but I'm probably going to get one soon just for dry fire practice. This is when it's really cool to be able to have a laser on your gun. And when you draw and you present the gun to the target, when you're pressing the trigger, you can see that laser dot bounce up and down. Hopefully it doesn't. If it doesn't move much, then that means you're holding the gun still and your dry fire, your trigger press is nice and smooth. If that laser dot's dancing quite a bit, well, then you got a problem. If you have a Trigicon RMR, optic on your pistol, for example. If you carry one with an RMR optic, same thing. You'll see that red dot bouncing up and down and dancing quite a bit. If you see that, that means you got some work to do. That means that you're not holding the gun still enough, and it means that your trigger press is not smooth enough. Now, finally, I want to talk about dry fire, and I want to close with numbers of repetitions. I like the number 25. I like to be able to do something 25 times correctly, okay, before going on to the next skill. So if I'm practicing my trigger press, I like 25 good trigger presses before I go on to practicing the draw or the reloads or the clearing malfunctions or the one-handed manipulations and things like that. Personal preference, mine's 25. I'm going to burn into my memory and burn into my skills and burn into my habits 25 perfect repetitions. So there's some ideas for you. You might want to borrow that from me or something. If you have a different method, of course, that works for you, then go for it. That's pretty much what I wanted to say on dry fire, folks. I got a few more things that I want to cover, but that's been the main topic of this show, is the dry fire and some practice routines. You may have some more things that you do that you like and that work for you. By all means, share them with us. Call my voicemail. Send me an email. Throw something up on Facebook. I always start a thread on the Gun Rights Radio Network for every podcast that I do. So you can put some information on there. You can respond to one of the threads that's in my sub forum. If you go to over to the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, you'll see the Handgun World sub forum that I've got over there. Put some information up there as well. So with that said, let's take a quick break. I got another voicemail to cover, and then we'll move on.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Okay, I got another voicemail. This was not solicited. This is Jeff from Minnesota. I didn't ask him to call this in or anything. He just decided to call it in. So here you go. Let's listen.
Hey, Bob, this is Jeff from the great state of Minnesota, about as far away from Texas as we can get, at least in the continental U.S. I just wanted to call and say thank you very much for all that you and Ben do. Your shows are absolutely fantastic. And I'm sitting here cleaning several guns after a weekend of teaching, and there's nothing better in the world than listening to your shows while I'm cleaning the guns. It just kind of makes it all come together. I also want to say thank you for the great Shooters Club that you have. I put off buying a membership for the longest time and beats the heck out of me why I didn't do it earlier. The Shooters Club content is fantastic. I've gotten a lot of great tips and tricks and looking forward to all the new stuff out there that keeps coming through. And I want to give a quick shout-out for the Sturdy Belt as well. I ended up winning one of those through the Shooters Club. So looking forward to receiving that and giving that a shot. I know you've talked about it a lot in the past, and I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So, again, thank you. And my last little tip here is, you know, if you've ever had to put together a Ruger Mark II, you know what pains I'm going through right now cleaning the guns. So, anyways, appreciate the show, and keep up the great work. You and Ben are awesome. Thanks so much from the great state of Minnesota.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that very much. Ben and I put a lot of work into the Shooters Club. We're going to the range. When you hear this, we will have just finished shooting some more video at the range that we normally teach at in San Antonio. So good stuff. Good stuff. It's a one-year membership, $75 a year. You get good videos and good audio content and some good information. I got a lot of really cool interviews. If you want to look at a sample or listen to a sample of what we have, you can go to shootersclubmembers.com. Shootersclubmembers.com, and you can get a little sampling. And then if you want, you can sign up from there. Don't forget, I'm doing another drawing on July 4th, Independence Day. I'm giving away 250 rounds of 9mm FMJ practice ammunition. And we're giving away two classes for any of the classes that Ben and I teach, okay, for the rest of 2013. So you might win one of those. And by the way, many thanks to Concealment Solutions. Jason Christensen donated a Black Mamba holster. God, I love the Black Mamba for inside the waistband concealed carry, especially carrying behind the hip strong side. Hard to beat the Black Mamba holster, the hybrid holsters that Jason Christensen makes at Concealment Solutions. For outside the waist training holsters and for concealed carry, White Dog Holsters. Devin at White Dog Holsters makes some really good stuff. I've got two of them. I've got a right-handed and a left-handed version. What's really cool is being able to use the left-handed version to practice left-handed. Hey, that's something else, dry fire. Do you dry fire practice with your gun left-handed? What if you have to shoot left-handed? What if you have to draw your pistol with your left hand? Say you're a right-handed shooter. Or if you're a left-handed shooter, can you draw your pistol with your right hand? Do you know how to do that? Okay. What if your strong side hand or arm is not functioning? What if the bad guy has it pinned behind your back? What if he's got a hold of it? What if you've just been shot in that arm or that hand? Can you draw your pistol with your opposite hand? This is one reason why I like appendix carry. It's so much easier and faster to draw with my off hand from the appendix carry position. A lot easier than it is to reach around all the way to my opposite side hip and draw. It can be done. Now this is very, you got to do this very carefully. I don't suggest, if you're kind of new, I don't suggest that you practice this live at all. We're going to demonstrate it. We're going to film how to do it and put it on our Shooters Club podcast. So if you're a member, pretty soon you're going to see a video on how to do that, how to draw with your opposite hand. Dry fire, dry fire, dry fire, practice that. You can do it with snap caps if you want, so you can also get a trigger press in there that simulates a real trigger press, okay? But, you know, can you do that? It's one of the reasons why I like the appendix carry. But anyway, I got a little off track there. I was talking about holsters and things, and many thanks to Jason Christensen and Devin from White Dog Holsters and David at Sturdy Belt. You just heard Jeff's voicemail. He won the Sturdy Belt. I'm wearing my Sturdy Belt right now. I got to head out to appointment, to a business appointment as soon as I get done dictating this podcast, and I got my Sturdy Belt, which is a terrific, classy looking, nice belt, but it's a gun belt. And he's making holsters over there too. So David, thank you very much. You can find these at concealmentsolutions.com, sturdybelt.com, and whitedogholsters.com. I'll say that again, concealmentsolutions.com, whitedogholsters.com, sturdybelt.com, and you can get Dale Fricke Archangel appendix carry holsters over at onesourcetactical.com at Suarez International. Really like my Dale Fricke appendix carry holster, although I'm playing around with another one that's also pretty good, which I might be talking about coming up in the future. Okay, well, hopefully I've given you some pretty good ideas and things to think about. I do want to mention that on July 13th, Ben and I are teaching a 4-hour skill building workshop for only $75. If you're a new shooter and you want sort of a private lesson from us, this is kind of a good thing, because Ben and I are both going to be there. It's only a 4-hour class. We're going to be working on things like drawing. A lot of the stuff I talked about today, drawing, we're going to be shooting on the move and going over some basic techniques on how to shoot on the move. Even for you experienced shooters, this might be a really good refresher of the basics, to practice the basics. We're going to go over some malfunctions, and then we're going to have a lot of fun. We just bought some new steel targets that move and that fall down and things when you shoot them. We're going to have man-on-man steel shooting competition, which is going to be a lot of fun. And that just kind of helps perfect your marksmanship, and just, it's a blast. Things you typically cannot do at most ranges. Come join us in San Antonio if you can. It's only $75 for that workshop from 9 to 1 on July 13th. We're going to beat the heat, get started early. Hopefully it won't be too hot by then. So check that out. Go to handgunworld.com and you can get signed up for that. And that's it, folks. Thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound any shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.